Excellent. Rest. If you weren't able to be here with us last week, we launched into this new series as we stepped into the fall, and we're looking at this idea of rest and the reality that for so many of us, we live our lives tired, or maybe the better way to say it is this: we live our lives unsettled. There's this restlessness in our soul. And yet Jesus has stepped into our lives and said that he can bring rest. Last week we saw how his idea of rest is different from ours. And so we think that rest seeps in, but Jesus says, no, rest seeps out. It starts from the soul and works its way out. This is why for so many of us, we continue to be restless, because it doesn't matter how many days we take off. It doesn't matter how many vacations we have. Rest doesn't seep in, and there's something within us. There's a restlessness and uneasiness in our soul that makes it almost impossible for us to be able to hold on to and maintain rest for any length of time. But Jesus says, no, I can bring the rest that you're looking for. Let me take you back to the passage that we started to look at last week. It's found in Matthew chapter 11. It says, then Jesus said, come to me, all of you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you. Let me teach you, because I am humble and gentle at heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy to bear, and the burden I give you is light. Can you say rest? Good. You did it the right way. It's not a word that you should yell. Rest. Jesus is stepping into our lives and saying, I can bring rest. Not just rest out here, rest in here. And as we saw last week, his first invitation in that is to come to him, to come and sit with him, to be with him. And he says, if you just come to me, those of you who are weary, those of you who are tired, those of you who are restless, come and sit with me and let me teach you. And my challenge to you last week was to come and to sit with him in the midst of the turmoil. When that turmoil begins to rise up within you, when that anxiety, when that stress level begins to increase, for you not to move faster, which is our normal inclination, but to come and to sit with him. If just for a moment to sit down and just say, and I've been saying this to myself over and over again throughout this week, Chris, you're not so wise and clever. You're not so wise and clever. You can't figure this out on your own. And so Jesus, I just want to sit, teach me. How'd it go this week? For some of you right now, you're thinking, oh, that's right, we talked about that last week. Maybe you remembered through Sunday night, came back to it on Wednesday for a little bit. It's been interesting for me because right now my wife and I are in the middle of some unrest as far as our home and all of this, and it's all very good, but it's causing all of this restlessness inside of me. And so it's been great because I've had so many opportunities to practice this and to call myself to it, to say, okay, what are you just going to go faster? Or are you just going to do more? Or are you going to sit? And just beginning to practice and build into my life a habit. You see, you have a habit in your life of how you respond to restlessness. And what Jesus is doing, he's saying, develop, this is the habit that you need to develop. Develop in your life the habit of coming and sitting with me. In the midst of the restlessness, to come and sit and to allow me to teach you. And last week, I told you coming out of that conversation that this week we were going to begin to dive into all the different ways in which Jesus teaches us about rest and the unique way that he brings rest into our future. And specifically, I said that this week we're going to talk about relationships and how Jesus brings rest into that question of relationships, whether it's a broken relationship or whether it's a relationship we wish we had or a relationship we wish we didn't have or a relationship that we can't figure out, how Jesus brings rest into that. Because for so many of us, the turmoil and the unrest in our soul is relational. But as I moved through the week, there was something that God just continued to bring me back to. And one passage in particular that I couldn't get away from. And last night as I sat and I was praying through this morning, and God, what is the next step for us in this journey of rest? I felt like he was saying, no, you need to talk about this first. Before we get to the other things, we need to talk about this first. And I know for some of you, that's going to frustrate you a great deal, and you're angry with me right now because you're thinking to yourself, no, you said you were going to do this. And I know how that works because I've got three little boys. And when I say I'm going to do something, well, then that has to happen. And some of you are thinking that right now, and I promise you that we'll get there. I promise you that we'll get there. But I do think there's something else that we need to talk about first. I think there's something fundamental, there's something at the foundation of our understanding of rest that we have to grasp if we're going to experience what Jesus has for us in this conversation, if we're going to experience the promise that he's given us that he can bring rest to our soul. It's found in a very unique passage because it's a passage where the writer is wrestling with his own soul. He's wrestling with the turmoil in his soul. He's going through exactly what we talked about last week. And as you walk through this passage, he's actually talking to his soul. And he's calling his soul to something and identifying something about himself that I think that we have to be honest about as we're in the midst of this conversation. The passage is Psalm 42. It's written, most people believe, by the ancient King David, the most successful and most powerful king in the history of the nation of Israel. And David, in this moment, is wrestling with his soul and something that he sees happening in his soul. I want to take you to the passage, and I'm going to read to you the entire psalm. It's not terribly long. And I want for you, as we read through it, to hear the conversation that he's having with himself and also with us. I'm going to start off in verse 1. It says this. It says, as a deer pants for flowing streams, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? My tears have been my food day and night, while they say to me all the day long, where is your God? He finds himself in the midst of this situation where there are those who are attacking him. And he's struggling. These things I remember as I pour out my soul. How I would go with the throng and lead them in procession to the house of God, with glad shouts and songs of praise, a multitude keeping festival. He says, I remember when I used to celebrate God. I remember when my soul wasn't in this state. I remember when I experienced God in this way. Why are you cast down, O my soul? And this is where he begins to have this internal conversation. Why are you cast down, O my soul? And why are you in turmoil within me? He's experiencing exactly what we talked about last week. He knows, as he looks inside, as he asks the question, okay, what's happening in my soul? He knows there's no rest. There's a turmoil there. Why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God. For I shall again praise him, my salvation and my God. My soul is cast down within me. Therefore, I remember you from the land of Jordan and of Hermon, from Mount Mizar. Deep calls to deep at the roar of your waterfalls. All your breakers and your waves have gone over me. By day, the Lord commands his steadfast love, and at night, his song is with me, a prayer to the God of my life. I say to God, my rock, why have you forgotten me? Why do I go mourning because of the oppression of the enemy? As with a deadly wound in my bones, my adversaries taunt me while they say to me all the day long, where is your God? And he's going through this. And if you've ever experienced a broken relationship in this way, you know what he's talking about. He says, it's like a wound in my bones. And then he ends this way. Why are you cast down, O my soul? And why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God. For I shall again praise him, my salvation and my God. It's the second time that he said that. He returns to it. The writer is struggling and wrestling through this turmoil in his soul. He's experiencing these incredibly painful circumstances, and he's trying to figure out what's happening. And as he's wrestling through this with his soul, at first it seems like there's no answer to his question. When you first come to the passage, it almost seems hopeless. It almost seems as if it's someone who's just trying to figure it out and can't find an answer. But then the more that you sit with it, the more you realize that he is actually providing an answer. It's just not necessarily the one that we would expect. Because I think for many of us, we expect in the conversation for there to be resolution and for the resolution to be that God steps in and changes the circumstance. And so he comes to God with this situation and he's talking about what's happening. And I think for most of us, we expect for the writer to conclude the psalm with a celebration of how God stepped in and how God conquered his adversaries and how God did this or how God provided this. But that's not the resolution. And so because that's what we're looking for, I think for some of us, we come to it and we say there is no resolution. But I think there is. We just don't necessarily see it. Twice he asked the question, "Why are you cast down, my soul? And why are you in turmoil?" He's engaging his soul and he's saying, Why is it that I'm struggling like this? Why is it that there's no rest? Why is it that there's turmoil? And he's speaking to himself in this moment of introspection. And then he speaks to his soul. And when he speaks to his soul, he actually provides the resolution. He says, "Hope in God." You see, the writer, as he's engaging his soul, he realizes that his hope has strayed. He realizes that his hope has strayed, that his hope is no longer in God, but that his hope has become about what God can do for him, or how God can change the circumstance, or what God can give to him. That's why he says, I'm questioning God, like, God, why haven't you done this? Why have you forgotten me? His question, why have you forgotten me, is based on the fact that God hasn't done something. God hasn't provided something. God hasn't intervened in the way that he thinks that God should. And as he's examining that in and of himself, he realizes, wait a second, my hope has strayed, and my hope has become about what God will do or what God will give or how God is going to change the circumstances instead of actually hoping and finding my hope in God himself. As you're on this journey, you'll discover this about hope. Hope is a very interesting thing, and hope is oftentimes very promiscuous. It's constantly looking for a lover. It's constantly looking for something to attach itself to. Hope cannot exist alone. It must be with something, someone. When hope finds itself alone, it brings to us depression. We find ourselves unable to hope in anything. And so hope is constantly searching for what it might attach itself to, often with very little discernment. And most of us pay very little attention to what it is that our hope has married itself to. And in this passage, what the writer is doing is he's examining his hope. He's asking his soul. He's examining within his soul, okay, what is it that my hope has actually found in? And as he's examining it, he's realized my hope has strayed. And my hope has become about what God is going to do or what God is going to give, as opposed to finding and connecting to the one thing that can actually bring me rest. Which is why he says to his soul, hope in God. He's confronting the fact that what will bring me rest is not that God will protect me in this moment, or that God will change the circumstance or eliminate my adversary. What will bring me hope is not that. What will bring me hope and what will bring me rest and what my hope should be secured in is the presence of God in my life. This is why when he starts, he's speaking about his soul to his soul. So when he starts the passage, what is it that he says? He says, as a deer pants for flowing streams, so pants my soul for you, O God. My soul thirsts for God, for the living God. He's speaking to his soul about what it is that his soul actually craves. And he's saying, what it is that you actually crave, what it is that will actually bring you rest, is not that God would change the circumstance, but that you would experience and know God in the midst of it. And so he's saying to his soul, why is it that you find yourself in the midst of turmoil? What you long for and what you need is available, but you have hoped in the wrong thing. And you've placed your hope in the wrong thing. And this can be very subtle in our life. And for many of us, this is our reality. For many of us, God is a means to an end. And our hope is in what God is going to give us or what God is going to provide for us. And my fear as we walk through this conversation, we talk about the rest that God can bring to our future and the rest that God can bring to relationships. My fear is that our hope will be in what God is going to do in this relationship instead of planting our hope and understanding that the rest that our soul needs is not found in the changing of that relationship, but in our experience and intimacy with the God who loves our soul. And we can begin to hope in the wrong thing. Begin to hope, as the writer did, in God's protection. If your hope is found in what God is going to provide or how God is going to protect, you're going to be very frustrated with this conversation. And you're going to be very frustrated with God because God does not take us out of the brokenness. He sends us into it. He calls us to be like his son Jesus, and Jesus did not run from the destruction. He ran into it that he might save us from it. And he calls us to do the same. And the writer is identifying, my hope is strayed. It's attached itself to something that doesn't bring rest. This happens in our life all the time. I was talking to someone the other day who is working through this in their own life, and they realized that their hope had been found in their marriage. But when their marriage failed, very quickly their hope turned to their career, and they're in the midst of realizing that their career couldn't satisfy them either, and their hope was looking for something else to attach itself to. And the writer's stepping in and saying, listen, there's only one thing that can actually bring rest to your soul. There's only one hope that you have for the rest that Jesus says that he can bring, and it's not found in what God can give or what God's going to change. It's found in Him. In experiencing His love and experiencing His presence. You see, one of the first things Jesus is going to teach you when you learn to come and sit, one of the first things that He's going to teach you is that the rest in your soul is not the result of what He's going to teach you and as a result is going to change in your life. That's not where the rest comes from. The rest comes from your actual experience of God's presence on a consistent basis. And here's what the writer is saying to his soul. He's saying, why is it that you're in turmoil? This is available to you. There is nothing that is keeping this from you. There is no circumstance that can keep you from the presence of God in your life. And this is the incredible hope that we have in Jesus. Do you understand this? If your hope is in the circumstances changing, you will always be restless because the circumstances in your life are going to constantly be changing. If your hope is found in what is external, you are always going to be, there's always going to be turmoil, but Jesus is calling us to place our hope in His presence. And here's what the writer is saying to his soul. He's saying, no. God's love is like, it's like waterfalls. It's crashing over me. It's around me all the time, soul. So why is it that you're in turmoil? And he's saying, if you will turn your trust, reorient your trust back to that which can actually bring rest to your soul, there is nothing that can keep you from it. No adversary can keep you from it. No circumstance in your life can keep you from it. Because here's one of the other things that David talks about in the Psalms is the reality that there's nowhere that I can go. David says this in another Psalm. He says, there's nowhere that I can go that God is not there with me. There's nowhere that I can go that God is not present. The same is true for you. There's no circumstance that you can find yourself in. There's no place that you could go where this is not available to you. And the reality is that Jesus has promised every single one of us, I will not leave you or forsake you. Deep calls to deep, he says. The depth of God's presence is calling to the depth of your soul. And he's saying, find in me the rest that you so crave. The solution for the turmoil is not what I'm going to change. The solution for the turmoil is your experience and your understanding of my constant presence in your life. And it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter where you've been, it doesn't matter what you've done. Jesus is inviting you into this. And Jesus gave his life on that cross for you to know this relationship with him, where you would never be without him again. See, this is what brings rest to our soul. But you have to learn to sit. You have to reorient your hope to Him, to your experience and intimacy with Him, and to begin to grow. Because here's the thing, God is with you all the time. It's not a question of whether He's with you or not with you, it's a question of whether you're aware of it. And the world and everything around you and the life that we live, it's constantly distracting us from His presence. Which is why in those moments we have to learn how to be able to sit and to be aware of His presence and allow that presence to do what only it can do, which is to bring rest to our soul. To bring peace to the turmoil. There's nothing that can keep you from this. Some people asked me after last week, what is up with the grass and the benches? What's up with all of this throughout the space? Why is it that you're doing this? The reason that we did it is this. We wanted to fill our space with representations of the lives that we experience on a day-to-day basis. We wanted to take a picture from a park, not a distant park, from a park that's right here inside of our community. All of our photographs have been local. Because here's the thing, we have this idea of rest that it's something that we have to go somewhere to find, that it's distant, and so we have to go on a vacation or we have to, but Jesus is bringing to us an idea of rest that is not distant. It's right here. He's bringing to us an idea of rest that is not something that we have to work for, but something that we have to realize. Something that's available to you right now, right here. Not something you have to create, not something you have to manufacture. Something that's available to you right now, right here. Let me ask you a question. What is it that your hope is connected to? What is it that you hope in? What is it that you're hoping will bring you satisfaction? What is it that you're hoping will bring you rest? What is it that you turn to when the unrest begins to develop in your soul? When that turmoil begins to bubble to the surface, what is it that you go to? Do you remind yourself of your success? Do you remind yourself of your accomplishments? Do you remind yourself of your position? Do you do something to exercise your power so you remind yourself of your power? Do you open your bank account on your phone so you can remind yourself of your savings? Do you open Facebook so you can remind yourself of your popularity? See how many likes you have? You see, I'm willing to bet that all of us have something that we turn to. What is it that you're hoping in? Again, we attach our hope to different things with very little discernment, so most of us won't be immediately aware of it. It takes a great deal of introspection, just like the psalmist, to engage your soul in a conversation and say, okay, wait, what is it that I actually turn to? Why is it that I always have that app open on my phone? Why is it that I constantly look at that account? Why is it almost all of us have something that we turn to? Very few of us want to be honest about it because we realize we would have probably never consciously put our hope in that. We've just done so by default. What is it that you've connected your hope to? Some of us don't want to say it because we realize that we've set ourselves up for destruction. We realize that that hope could so easily crumble. Jesus is stepping into your life and inviting you to a deep hope. A hope that is not based on what he's going to give or the circumstances changing. A hope that is available in any circumstance, in any situation. A rest that is available in any circumstance, in any situation. But you have to change what it is that you're hoping in. Will you bow your heads with me? Just for a moment, be honest with yourself about what it is that you're hoping in. Let me ask you, will you trade that for His presence? Will you trade that for His presence? Several years ago, I found myself in the midst of probably the worst turmoil in my soul. From the moment that my second son was born with Down syndrome, my soul was in turmoil. Constant unrest. It got to the point where I felt like I was going to have to walk away from what it is that I do because I was so angry with God. I could find no rest for my soul. Couldn't figure out how to love my family through it. I couldn't figure out how to love my wife through it. I decided to go away for a weekend with a group that I had been working with called Axiom. You may have heard us talk about it before at Hoboken Grace. We work with them a lot ever since that weekend because I went away. It's just a time of silence and solitude with God, and I really went away as kind of a last effort. I was going to go away and wrestle with God, and if we couldn't resolve it, then I realized that I probably was going to have to change a lot in my life. And as I've told people the story, I told them, I don't really know what happened. I don't really know what happened over the course of those 3 days. God just changed my heart. I went away angry, and I came back grateful. I went away in turmoil, and I came back at peace. And I couldn't explain it. I used to tell people it's just a miracle. God just miraculously changed my heart. But the more time that I've spent in looking at this idea of rest and the rest that Jesus brings, and specifically what you see in this passage and what this writer is wrestling through, I realize that as I went away, what happened is that I experienced the presence of God. And in experiencing the presence of God, I realized that that's what I wanted most. I realized that that's what my soul had been craving, and I realized that there wasn't a moment of my life that God had withheld that from me. And it left me unbelievably grateful. Because I discovered a rest that was bigger than circumstance. I discovered a rest that could never be taken from me. I discovered the greatest gift that God has ever given me, which is Him. And His tangible presence in my life. What is it that you're hoping in? Will you trade that for His presence? I know for some of us it's scary. For some of you it's scary because you've bought into the whole religion thing. You're very good at the religion thing, but you're really scared to actually know God. For others of you, you're scared because you've been lied to about him. One of the things I love about Matthew 11 is that Jesus says, come to me, those of you who are weary. And then he says this about himself. He says, I'm humble and gentle. What an amazing thing for the God of the universe to say. I'm humble and gentle. But he's speaking to those of you who are here and you're afraid or you're worried or you're exploring this, but you're hesitant to actually come to Jesus, to actually let him in to your life. He says, I'm humble and gentle. What he's saying to you is this. It's safe. It's safe. It's safe. Come here. Come here. It's safe. Will you trade what it is that you've wrapped your hope around for him? Why are you downcast, O my soul? Hope in God. Why are you in turmoil? Hope in God. Awaken to the beauty and the power of his presence. God, I pray that your presence would be powerfully felt in this moment by everyone who is here. Father, we know that you are not distant from us, but that you are here with us. But Father, we have for long become dull. Our senses have been dulled to your presence. Father, I pray that you would awaken that within us. I pray that the power of your presence would be known. And that for every single one of us that we would experience what can only come from your presence, which is rest. Father, I pray for a taste of the rest that you bring. So that we might begin to seek above all else above anything that you can bring or anything that you can give that we might begin to seek you first Father, I thank you for the rest that is above circumstance, available in every situation, for the rest that you have brought to our soul. In Jesus' name.